The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to another episode of the Dose of Leadership podcast, the show that brings you inspiring and educational interviews with today's most relevant and motivating leaders. Each episode is dedicated to highlight real-life leadership and influence experts who dedicate their lives to the pursuit of the truth, common sense, and courageous leadership. And now, here's your host, Richard Ryerson.
Hey, welcome to Dose of Leadership. So happy you're tuning into the show. Great conversation today with Ezra Kuchars. Ezra started out in the Army as an Army officer, eventually found himself in NASA in their Space Shuttle and Space Station Medical Operations Division, and got an advanced degree, worked at Duke University, and that meeting at Duke, he eventually met Coach K in the sports department, and he got on the kind of the front end of the internet revolution at the time, and he's become this award-winning corporate entrepreneur, and he's served a number of senior-level positions at NBC Universal. He's a chief operating officer for iVillage and a senior vice president for digital innovation, where he launched NBC Universal Digital Media Studio. He's created high growth and scale digital organizations within legacy businesses for the past 17 years. And he's, again, got more than 20 years experience creating, evolving, and managing several leading internet sports, media, and entertainment programs. He just recently, he was the special advisor to the CEO of CBS Corporation, Les Moonves, and he served as the president of CBS Local Digital Media since February of 2010. He just has developed this vast platform of news, sports, event, music, and entertainment properties, and bringing together the most trusted brands in media. But I really appreciate Ezra's leadership style and his views on life and mindset, which we talk about a lot here in Dose of Leadership. And Ezra's mindset is something that we should all emulate, specifically when obstacles present themselves to you. Sometimes we can let that obstacle bury us, but the way Ezra looks at it is that the obstacle actually becomes the way. The obstacle can actually point you into so many other opportunities, so many other doors that you can go through as long as you're willing to take the smart risk to go through them. And Ezra's life is a great example of that. So I really think you're going to enjoy this conversation, all the nuggets that he provides and the wealth and the vast knowledge that he provides when it comes to leadership and taking smart risk. Let me know where you're at in your leadership journey. Reach out to me at richard@doseofleadership.com. Email me directly, or you can go to the contact pages on richardryerson.com and doseofleadership.com. I answer every single email, and just let me know, no strings attached, where you're at in your journey, what advice you can need, how I can help you become the better leader that you were called to be. I'm more than happy to see where you're at. You can also learn more about my coaching and speaking services, my masterminding at richardryerson.com, and of course, Legacy Leader Blueprint, my online video course, coupled with 4 interactive online coaching sessions with me for $349 a seat. You can learn more about that, again, at legacyleaderblueprint.com, or follow the links on Dose of Leadership or richardryerson.com. All right, without further ado, here's Ezra Kuchars here on Dose of Leadership. Ezra, welcome to Dose of Leadership. It's an honor to have you here.
Oh, thanks for having me. I really appreciate you taking the time to invite me as a guest.
I'm so impressed with your resume and all that you've accomplished over the years. It's interesting that you started out as an Army officer, going back, you know, and as a former Marine Corps officer, I always ask this question for guys that have been in the military. How much of that experience translated or helped you in the corporate arena? It helped me a lot.
I would agree with you. It helps me every day. I think you learn a pretty amazing work ethic in the military, where you know everything is about hard work. And so, when I look at my peers, you know, I will outwork anybody in my peer group just because it's the way I've been able to get ahead. And so, I look back at my military experience as something that was tremendous, and it really it helped me with my career.
Yeah, I would say that the tenacity piece the Marine Corps ingrained in me more than anything else. I mean, I suppose you could say you were always tenacious, but I think the never quit attitude was deeply ingrained in me once I was in the military. That's the biggest takeaway I got. And it's less about talent, more about tenacity for me anyway.
Yeah, look, there's certainly been a lot of stuff that's come out in the industry, in the trades, the last year or two. You know, Angela Duckworth's book about grit,
right?
I think, really talks to this. You know, intelligence is important, but really what kind of sets people for success is hard work and resilience.
Right.
And, you know, I always joke about it. I'm not the brightest bulb in the chandelier, but I'm about as resilient as they come, and I'll work harder than anybody. And that's really how I've gotten ahead. You know, especially when you meet a lot of millennial, you know, staff members who worked for me over the last few years, you know, it's something we've had to work on with them where, you know, it's not, you know, it may not be the kind of the view that Silicon Valley takes of the workplace.
You know, it's interesting to see how, you know, if I look at your career path and I'm curious to learn about this, I would imagine that if I asked you 25 years ago, you'd be doing what you're doing now, you'd probably say, I had no idea I'd be doing this. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I really thought I was going to be flying helicopters in the Army for, you know, the first 20, 25 years of my career.
Yeah.
I thought I was going to be a medevac pilot you know, life throws a bunch of curveballs at you. What I learned early on is you can't really have a career plan because it never goes as planned. You just got to work hard and seize opportunities when they come.
And I think that's important, right? And that's the mindset that I kind of wanted to tap into is like when an opportunity presents itself, you seem like the type of guy that goes through the door and just seeing where it leads. Is that fair?
Yeah, I am definitely, you know, the old cliche, or it's not so old, but a cliche about, you know, when you're offered a seat on a rocket ship, don't ask which seat, right? And so for me, I've had a couple times in my career where I believed in what an organization or an individual was doing, and I joined that organization. And, you know, 9 times out of 10 for me, that's worked. Occasionally, you know, you make bad decisions.
Right. Well, they're not always going to be perfect, but even sometimes those bad decisions presents itself with 2, 3, or 4 other doors, right? I mean, I think sometimes what has seemed an insurmountable obstacle, and I think this is important in leadership, is sometimes the obstacle actually is the way, right? The obstacle actually steers you to the path that you're supposed to be going anyway.
Yeah, I would say, you know, even when I've failed in my career, it's turned into new huge opportunities for me. And as long as you're learning, it works. And so for me, you know, when I look at a job or a role, I'm always focused on what am I going to learn and who am I going to work with and who am I going to network with. And it's a different approach. I'm not worried about status. I'm not worried about, you know, big office. And, you know, I've had the jobs with those type of things. And, you know, the most important things are professional growth and, you know, and opportunity.
So how did that lead to Total Sports? This was very interesting, you know, at the dawn of kind of the digital media age, you founded Total Sports, or was one of the founders anyway. And how did that come about? That seems very, and that's early on. You're still in the Army at this time.
Yep, I'm in the Reserve still then. It's one of these like beautiful accidents. I was an Army officer, like literally the week after I graduated school, I was in the Army. And I was at Fort Knox, assigned to the 12th Cavalry. And, you know, I had, like I said earlier, I was set on being a medevac pilot. But there were, in 1989 and 90, there were these congressional cuts to the military,
right,
called the Graham Rudman cuts.
Yep.
And they cut the helicopter pilot slots by 2/3. So I ended up in my second choice, which was being a armored cavalry officer. And so I ended up at Fort Knox during the beginning of the first Gulf War. And through a confluence of just, you know, things that just sort of happened, I end up getting a civilian job at NASA at the Johnson Space Center. And I worked there as a mission controller for the first 18 months, and it was a crazy time in the space program. We did 11 space shuttle missions in 18 months. And as one was coming up, one was coming down, and it was just
it's crazy.
It was probably a little too much. And then my last 2 years there, I ran all medical training for astronauts and mission controllers. And while I was there, they sent me to business school at night. And, you know, look, I have a bunch of buddies that are astronauts. And they said, you know, if you are serious about wanting to try to get an astronaut slot, you got to get another advanced science degree. So I got a full ride to Duke from the NIH.
Wow.
You know, this is 1994. There's this new thing called the internet, and I'm doing all this research in medicine, the internet, and artificial intelligence. And about a year into the program, I had this buddy, a guy named Quinn Snyder, who's the head coach of the Utah Jazz now. And, you know, I'm saying to him one day, you know, I wish I could do in sports what I'm doing at the hospital. You know, it's this great thing called the internet, blah, blah, blah. And so probably about a week or two later, I find myself in Coach K's office with Coach K, Quinn, a bunch of coaches, senior staff from the athletic department, and Mrs. K.
Wow.
And telling him about this great, and this is like 1995 at this point.
Right.
There's this great thing called the internet. It's going to take over everything. You need to be online. The athletic department needs to be online, et cetera, et cetera. And to his credit, he greenlit me, you know, he hired me, so per se, to do that. And I took the athletic department online, Coach K online, Grant Hill online, and we were smart. The group of us that got that started, we started a company, which eventually became Total Sports. And next thing I know, within 6 months, we had 25 clients.
Wow.
We had Georgia Tech, the Naval Academy, the Southeastern Conference, a bunch of newspapers. And so that's the genesis of Total Sports. And I ended up taking a leave of absence from Duke. I ended up eventually getting a gentleman's master's. I started that business with a couple of buddies and grew it into a large business, and we sold it in late 2000.
I love that, you know, just the fact that you're like, okay, we didn't get the helicopter slot, so I go to NASA. NASA sends me to business school, go to Duke. Duke led to the meeting with Coach K and all the groups, which led to that. I love that chain of events.
Well, it's like a theme. And like when I go speak at business schools and undergraduate programs, I always meet kids that are like, all right, I have this career plan. I'm going to do this for 3 years and this for 4 years. And you know, I always say to them, like, don't worry about it.
Right.
Focus on the job you're in right now. Work your butt off. And that'll turn into other things.
Yeah. It's having that flexibility and the openness of those opportunities like we're talking about, right? I'm sure it was kind of a crushing defeat that you weren't going to be a helicopter pilot because you had your mind set on it.
Another way I talk about this is I've failed in everything I've tried to do.
Right.
And I literally mean that. I wanted to be a helicopter pilot. I ended up being an armored cavalry officer. I wanted to be an astronaut. I launched the media business. Content platforms when I was at NBC Universal. I ended up eventually going to CBS and doing that. But, you know, it's one of those things where you can't look at failing at something as a failure, right? When I fail, I never really fail. I learn. And that's hard, especially, you know, with the millennial mindset these days.
Right.
It's really, really hard for people to hear.
Well, you know, failure becomes, I've said this many times in this show, that it becomes a nonsensical word. What does it even mean? I mean, what does failure even mean? And I think it's because we for whatever reason, it's drummed into us that we have to have this plan and contingency plans for life. And I just don't think you can. I mean, you can plan to go a certain way, but It's like I say, even in business, and that's probably the biggest thing I learned in flying planes in the Marine Corps, is like you have a plan, but you don't plan, you don't set up a plan hoping that everything will, I mean, you hope everything will go the right way, but you plan to deal with the inevitable unforeseen, if that makes sense. It's a subtle but different way of looking at it, you know?
I agree with you, and you know, there's also the Mike Tyson adage, right? Everybody has a plan until they get hit in the face.
Right. Right. It's so true, and I think that if we're planning and thinking that life is going to be this linear set of well-executed plans, it's just like you're setting yourself up for disappointment, when really it's this kind of jagged path, but at least it's going towards some. But you got to be – I think the key to that, though, is having tremendous self-awareness. I don't think if you're truly self-aware of who you are and really what it is you want to accomplish. I'm talking bigger picture, not just like I want to be a helicopter pilot, but even thinking like, well, I want to me, it's always got to add value to something. You know, if you can sit there and say, I'm going to add value to every transaction that I come across, no matter how big or how small, particularly the small ones, then I think you're setting yourself up on a winning trajectory. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I'm not sure that a lot of folks are wired that way these days.
Yeah, so I agree with you. I don't even know if I was wired that way. But once I started hearing that, once I started realizing that it's all about adding value, then leadership and life and everything becomes a choice, right? No matter, and just like your example you gave, the obstacle became the way, right? The obstacle, and I think sometimes we think the obstacle is preventing us from our true calling, but really the obstacle actually points you towards the calling, if that makes sense.
Yeah, look, I left CBS about 2.5 months ago, and you know, I remain very close with Leslie Moonves, the CEO. He's a friend and a mentor. And when I made the decision, a bunch of my peers said to me, "Are you crazy? Like, I can't believe you're walking away from a role like that." And you know, my response to them is, it's time, right? Like, you know, right. I may end up going back to work for Leslie at some point, but, you know, right now it's about further professional growth and looking at some new opportunities. And a lot of people aren't wired that way. That's for sure.
Yeah. What are your habits? I mean, if you could look back, your personal professional development habits, do you have any, and how have they changed over the years?
So, I'm a big believer in directed learning. And what I mean by that is I try to spend, I don't know, 4 to 8 hours a week forcing myself to learn something.
Right.
Right. Whether it's learning how to write code, improve my French, certain, you know, like fly fishing, outdoor skills. And I'm not a, sit around and loaf kind of guy. And so in our house, you know, with our kids and my wife, there's not a lot of sitting around on couches on the weekends. And so it's a habit, and it's one of the smartest things I've ever done. I would also say I probably read more than most people in my peer group, because I'm trying to stay on top of the industry and learn as much as I can.
I agree with you. I think reading has probably been the biggest transformation. I've always read, but I voraciously read now. And I think that has improved, at least from a self-awareness standpoint, and on a mindset than anything else. What you said about forcing yourself to learn something new, and I'm impressed, you know, fly fishing, whatever the case may be. I'm curious, I instinctively think I know what the benefits would be, but I'm curious to see, what have you seen as the biggest benefit of forcing yourself into different comfort zones? What have you seen, the biggest change?
So so it's funny you say that and use that phrase, because one of the things I've always taught my leadership teams that have worked for me is this phrase of get comfortable being uncomfortable.
Right.
And what I try to stress upon young executives is life's not, you know, and business life is not simple, and things don't always go as planned. So you have to be ready to deal with some issues. And so by forcing myself to learn new things constantly, it creates a mindset. And it creates the ability to look at things, you know, at times with a skeptical eye, and at other times, you know, looking at things where, you know, I can actually apply a skill set or something I learned from one thing in my life to another. And once again, you know, people in general tend to be, lazy is probably the wrong word. You know, I think probably the way to say it is they try to take the easy way out. And for me, it's all about trying to stay outside my comfort zone.
Yeah, I love how you said you're getting comfortable with being uncomfortable, because I think on that, we seem to be wired or taught that when you have those feelings of uneasiness, the nervousness, the fear, the tightness of the throat, the butterflies in the stomach, that that's something to be avoided. I think that's a gift. I think there's something that's a barometer and probably something you should be pursuing, because on the other side of that, something significant is going to happen, I believe. And once you get comfortable with that and seeing that that's a gift, then that's kind of the edge of life. I mean, I think that tells me that you're living if you're pushing through that.
I'll give you a great example. So this past week, I was on vacation with my family in Montana, and I have younger children, right? Like I have an 11-year-old and an 8-year-old, and they're both fairly adventurous and strong swimmers. But at one point, we went rafting, and the water was moving pretty well through, you know, some rapids and stuff. And I looked at the two of them, and, you know, my wife was in the boat with us with a guide. And I had checked this out with the guide. I said to the two kids, let's jump in and float down the rapids for the next quarter mile. You know, no boat, just, you know,
right, with
toes and nose out of the water, right? You kind of do like the sea otter and you bounce your way down. And, you know, my kids were, you know, a little nervous, but long story short is I convinced them to do it. And you know, I got them comfortable being, you know, kind of nervous and uncomfortable about it. And they were happy they did it. It was a great experience.
You know, that mindset leads to what I call smart risk, right? It's like, I think it's not, you can't get through, or you can't lead a significant life without executing some sort of risk and dealing with fear and uncertainty. But it's the smart risk, right? It's not the stupid risk. It's the smart risk.
Yeah, I call that, I have a bunch of ex-military buddies, and what I'll call it is the careless risk.
Right, yeah. I like that better, yeah, careless risk. How important, because you've been up there at the highest echelons in some major corporations, and obviously, you know, being an advisor to Les Moonves, I mean, that's about as big as it gets. How important, I think a lot of times, I'm talking to my 20-year-old daughter, and there's this perception is you gotta be political in your relationships. You gotta be, you know, to get ahead, you gotta step on people's backs. I don't believe that at all. I think honest, genuine, authentic relationships are still the key to making it in the corporate arena. So talk to me a little bit about your philosophy on relationship building and how we do that in an authentic way.
So I'm the, I guess, the abnormal guy in the media business. I don't have a political bone in my body.
Right.
I don't operate that way. I don't tolerate people on my teams that operate that way. I think you have to have authentic relationships, and they have to be built on candor and communications. So if somebody's doing something great, you need to tell them. If somebody's doing something that's not great, you need to tell them as well. And what I have passed on roles at certain organizations because they're highly political.
Right.
And they're driven by a CEO that is highly political. And for me, if you're going to go work for a CEO that deliberately pits his direct reports or her direct reports against each other, that's a really bad idea.
I love that you said that. And what would you say to those, and probably one of the biggest questions I get on this show from listeners is there are these mid-level, or even they can even be director level, but they're in the middle of the organization and they're working for, or they're in a fairly dysfunctional environment, i.e. the senior leadership is dysfunctional, they're political. What would you say to that individual to, number one, make an effect? I mean, what advice would you give that person?
So if you work in a very political organization, you got to make some decisions, right? And I'm not saying quit your job and, you know, be unemployed. But what I would urge people to do is figure out a way that you can operate in that environment without getting sucked in. Because if you end up becoming part of that political machine, whenever there's politics, there's always somebody that wins and there's always somebody that loses.
Yep.
And no matter how good you are, if you're political, you're at some point going to end up on the losing end.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the other way to think about it is if you're thrown in that environment, and I've given this advice to somebody as recently as about 2 weeks ago, she had come to me and say, you know, my organization is really political. You know, my boss wants me to do this, but this other person who's a peer of my boss wants me to do that. And I would ask the question of, you know, do you see your boss helping you with your career over the next 10 years? And the person was like, no, my boss is only out for themselves. And then I'd ask, what about the other person? Do you think the other person is somebody that you can, you know, work with over time? And, you know, they're like, yeah, they've already taken me kind of under their wing a little bit. And so you've got to feel your way through it a little bit. It's a little bit more finesse than brute force. But if you can, the number one thing is try not to be political and try not to get sucked in.
That's great advice. And I love what you said about it's more about finesse than brute force. I think you really only got two options, and bitching about it isn't one of them. You know, I've been guilty of that, standing around the water cooler complaining about, well, if things, you know, so-and-so wasn't such a jackass, then we'd be fine, which is probably true, but how much of that can you affect? And so if that's not one of the choices, the other choice is either leave, or if you decided, you know, make us go at it, the organization. I like what you said. It's the finesse is make the decision to either establish a professional relationship with this person if you can. And I found that I've given that, and I've done it myself, to successful outcome. When I found that I started investing in this kind of dysfunctional leader on trying to make them a better leader, I found that they were more insecure than a lot of people realized. And so I tried to augment whatever their weaknesses were. And does that make sense? And I found,
I think that's great. This
dysfunctional leader actually was a lot more insecure than most people thought. And then I became more empathetic, and then therefore again became an asset to this individual. And I've given that advice, and I've done it myself, and I've seen some success that way. So anyway, I love what you said there. The finesse part, you're absolutely right. It's not black and white.
No, definitely not. You know, and thank you for those kind words. It's there's a lot of people that don't understand. You can't always get your way in a straight line.
Right. And that goes back to, you said some great things there. What I heard in this relationship building, it to me, and I've said this time and time on the show, that it's about the currencies needed are authenticity, vulnerability, which is a great strength, and courage. And boy, you need a whole bunch of that courage. And again, these are all choices that you can make. And that, when you realize that those are all things that are in your control, then I think the wiring, as you were talking about before, starts to get changed in your brain anyway, about what, you know, what it means to lead in a difficult situation.
Yep, definitely.
So what's next? I mean, wow. I mean, here at CBS, you know, digital marketing has become your kind of, and digital media has become your forte. What's on the horizon for you?
You know, I'm trying to figure that out. I'm doing a bunch of consulting and advising, everything from big media companies to startups. It's been, you know, a couple big brands as well. It's been a lot of fun. I'm an operator at my core. So I probably can see myself taking a role somewhere at the right organization when I find it. At the same time, I'm spending a lot of time with organizations looking at how they're using data. Because everybody, you go talk to any brand, any media company, any service business, and they say, oh, we have a ton of data. And then I always will come back and say, okay, what are you doing with that data?
Right.
Like, how are you monetizing it? you know, and using data to retarget ads on the internet isn't a long-term strategy, right? It's if everybody's collecting data on the same 200 million people and everybody's using that data to target ads on Facebook, Instagram, or just on online, that's not going to be a winning strategy. So for me, you know what, I'm just taking my time and, you know, I'll find the right opportunity. In the meantime, you know, the advising and consulting opportunities out there have been great.
What part of the world do you want to change? What's something that really bugs you?
You know, I lately have been spending a little bit of time thinking about, I'll use autonomous vehicles as an example. So in October of last year, I think it was Uber partnering with Anheuser-Busch, had a truck drive in Colorado 120 miles to deliver beer. The driver got the car, or this truck on the highway, jumped into the passenger seat. The car drove itself, or the truck drove itself. And so autonomous vehicles are real. I think probably by 2025, you'll see a significant amount of them on the road. And I think the Department of Labor has said by 2025, about 1.8 million people that drive vehicles are going to be unemployed.
Wow.
So what I always ask when I do these talks is, what do you think those 1.8 million people are doing about job retraining right now?
Yeah, probably nothing.
Right? And then the Department of Labor also had like another study about, they estimated almost 2 million people will be unemployed working in grocery stores because of automation. And so you're going to get to about 2025, maybe as far as 2030, and there's going to be millions of people unemployed because the robots took my job. And so, you know, one of the things I'm starting to give a lot of thought to is what can be done now to help do job retraining for these folks.
Yeah.
Right? Because some of these roles are not going to be out there anymore. And, you know, will you be able to write code to, you know, do bus dispatching? Right?
Right.
Because if you're somebody that, let's say, drove a bus for 15, 20 years, and now, you know, it's an automated solution, there's still going to have to be dispatching, and there's still have to be software behind it. And if you get out there and maybe try to learn how to code a little bit, it'll go a long way. And so I'm thinking about that a good bit, because I think you're about to see just a giant transformation in the marketplace of jobs that take people right now and are going to be completely automated. And that's going to be tough for a lot of people.
Yeah. You know, I think that if you look, I mean, it's certainly coming. I mean, there's enough out there that's happening. And if you look, you know that it's aware, but yeah, how do you take the initiative? What can you do? How can you be? Because with every great transition or shift, there's great opportunities, right? So even
Correct.
Though you say that, hey, this industry's going away, but it's happened since the dawn of man, right? I mean, at some point, the guy that owned the buggy whip business had to rethink as cars, you know, started replacing the horse and carriage, right? So you may have been the key buggy whip guy in town, but what are you going to do with this wave coming down the pike?
Yeah, you know, another great example is some of the rhetoric that comes out of the White House about, you know, manufacturing jobs being lost to, you know, other parts of the world, when the truth is about 80% of those manufacturing jobs were lost to automation.
Right.
Not that stuff going abroad. And so it's just, you know, it's a different mindset. And people are going to have to focus on their education a little bit more and learn some new skill sets.
Well, I love what you've done. I love your mindset. Again, you're the type of leader that we love to highlight here in Dose of Leadership. How can people, you know, get in touch with you? Do you want people to connect with you? How can they find out more about you?
So the easiest way on Twitter, it's ekucharz, which is E-K-U-C-H-A-R-Z. Additionally, probably the best way to reach out is via LinkedIn. You know, it's Ezra Kucharz, which is E-Z-R-A-K-U-C-H-A-R-Z. And those are probably the best two ways to reach out to me.
Hey, and congratulations, too, on the appointment at Duke as the entrepreneur in residence, I guess. Am I saying that
yep.
right? Yeah.
Yep.
Congratulations
Definitely.
On that. That was recently, right?
Yeah, a couple weeks ago. So that it's exciting. You know, I get to go back and teach at a place I went to graduate school in. And I'm going to be teaching undergraduates and, mentoring companies and things like that. And it's really exciting.
Ezra, what an honor to know you. And again, thank you for all the wonderful leadership nuggets and insights that you gave to this day on the show. And I'm proud to have you in the Dose of Leadership tribe. Thanks for coming on the show.
Richard, thank you very much for having me. And please, I look forward to talking again soon.
Absolutely. Thanks, Ezra.
All right. Take care.
Hey, thanks for tuning into the show. Go to richardryerson.com or doseofleadership.com and fill out the contact page and reach out to me. Let me know where you're at your leadership journey. Also, if you want access to my brand new online leadership course to help become a better leader, go to legacyleaderblueprint.com. Fill out your email and you gain access to a free 12-minute video that will reveal the top secrets of leadership and also show you how you can gain access, exclusive access, to my online leadership course. That's legacyleaderblueprint.com. Hope to see you on the inside. Thanks for tuning into the show.
Some people might say coffee doesn't need chocolate, but you're not some people. You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavors swirling together with cold brew, topped with velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. That imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. It's a cold brew dream come true. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.